Good morning, and what we are going to do, instead of informational hearing at this time, we have a couple of bills to move out, and one or two members might have to go to other committee meetings to testify, so we are going to do the work session.
Yeah, hearing on one bill and two work sessions.
Okay, and so I'd like to, this is the House Committee on Trade and Economic Development Committee to order, and I'd like to open the work session on, what's that? Okay, first the 2020, I'd like to open work session on House Bill 2161.
Mr. Chairman, this is the bill that you heard a couple of weeks ago that abolishes the Oregon Capital Corporation. I think that there was some concern about whether the provisions in the bill might be useful still. As you may recall, there was no one who appeared who wished to have it preserved, and so you held it over until today to do the work session.
Okay, and we have a letter concerning this House Bill 2161 from the Floyd G. Lanter administrator explaining some concerns we have, especially concerns expressed by the Representative Nelson. And I'm wondering, have you read this? Are you satisfied with this letter?
No.
No. Okay. Which means you have not read it, you are not satisfied.
No, sir, I have not read that letter.
Oh, okay. And let me give you the copy, sir.
Please, thank you.
Yes. Let me give you my letter, okay. And so any discussions on the House Bill 2161? We heard this bill before, and then I'm sure you're familiar with this bill.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Nelson.
You know, I guess the concern that I have said that in this letter from Mr. Lanter, House Bill 2161 is merely asking the legislature to recognize that the Oregon Capital Corporation implementing statutes no longer reflect the environment that existed in 1987.
Uh-huh.
And to me, absolutely, these statutes are absolutely incredible. You know, the 87 legislature sought to stimulate our economy,
mm-hmm.
and we certainly need it. And I think the question that wasn't answered when it said no applications for certification of the Oregon Capital Corporation were processed and no certification was ever made, and yet it was intended to generate this $40 to $50 million for risk capital to be invested primarily in promising Oregon traded sector enterprises, and that's an issue I continuously get from my constituents, is where's the capital to help us, you know, launch a business enterprise. So
if you read the photograph on that, there's more explanation on that issue.
I did read it. And so I'm just wondering, I mean, it seems very strange to me that this was authorized, that we did it, and somehow either we didn't communicate or something, if nobody, you know, worked to generate this money. So therefore, these other entities that have been created by the private sector, I guess, are supposed to take the place of this. I don't know. It seems awfully strange that an entire legislature would pass this measure and then nothing ever happened to stimulate the economy. So I'm concerned that we have nothing in place in the public sector to provide the same opportunity. What this letter says is, you know, that there are several venture capital firms, but I don't see it happening. I don't see jobs being built in Economic and Community Development Department. Perhaps Department of Ag is continuing to assist agriculture activities, but in energy. But other than that, I don't see, you know, where that pot is of capital to assist entrepreneurs, unless somebody else on the committee knows of it.
Do you know anyone who can testify? Someone here?
I don't know if there's anyone here to testify on this.
Do we have anyone here? Yes, please come forward.
Chair Lim, members of the committee, good morning. For the record, Floyd Lanter, Administrator of the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, member of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Chair Lim, Representative Nelson, in response to your question, the statute that implemented this program expired in 1989, and while the issue has merit in any environment, it would require a new statute or implementing statute to do something like this today. The proposal in 1987 was met without interest from the industry or the participating members in the economy. So
time has expired.
Yes.
And it's obsolete.
Yes.
So we are just cleaning up.
We're trying to clean up the statutes, exactly.
All right.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Lanter, could you please tell me what is in place now?
Chair Lim, Representative Nelson, that was the intent of the letter, to give you an idea of the private participants that have attempted to fill this void, if you will.
I'm wondering about the public participation.
Chair Lim, Representative Nelson, as the last paragraph on the first page of the letter indicates, these would be the state agencies that are involved with this type of activity today.
Okay. Follow-up.
Well, you know, those certainly, you know, we just talked about the Department of Agriculture and Economic Development and the Energy Group, but where is this pot? This bill, as I saw it, did not restrict activities to any particular area. Many of my constituents, you know, would be interested in pursuing. Those three entities exist, period, but do not exist to fill this mission.
Chairman, don't we have a provision for this? Didn't we ask that that we make capital funds available through some of the lottery money? And didn't we ask that we make capital funds available? And we had a percentage set aside for risk. I do believe there is a mechanism for state monies on this sort of venture is available right now. I think we were told that.
Yes, we do have some funds available, such a CAPS program, and then about five or six different programs from the
investment.
Yeah. Yes.
So I believe there is capital available for those.
But the 2161 has nothing to do with it at this point. This is obsolete, and then that began 1987, did you say, and then expired by 1979. And so this is just obsolete, and we are just cleaning up. And then this bill has nothing to do with the current the funding situation at all.
So, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
my concern, and to Mr. Steiner, we put, you know, sunsets on almost every bill we pass, and this to me is just one more. So, and often, you know, we just extend those. So, I'm just amazed there's been no consideration to, you know, extend this rather than delete it.
If we extend it, we need a bill to do that at this time. So if we extend it, we need a bill. And so this is strictly the obsolete one. We are just cleaning up at this time. So I don't think we can just extend it without a bill.
Mr. Chairman, you could amend this to extend it. You could amend this bill. You wouldn't need an entirely new bill.
We don't need
the title says relating to the Oregon Capital Corporation, so you could do anything with the Capital Corporation. This bill currently abolishes it, but you could extend it and still be within the relating clause.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Buckley?
I would argue against that the extension. Part of the work that we're doing in general government is with these streamlining bills, and I'm sure they come to this committee as well. And my point of view is that if a program is not working, we should not keep it going. We should only spend our time, energy, and investment on programs that actually have a track record of success.
Okay. Okay. And let's, yes. Vice Chair Merkley.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm really sympathetic with Representative Nelson's comments in that her goal is to try to make sure that we provide capital opportunities for Oregon corporations. I reach a different conclusion about the bill itself in that I think it's important to undertake experiments. We are currently undertaking an experiment with the $100 million that we are directing towards Oregon venture activities. That's kind of the new experiment in the same category. I don't think it would be inappropriate to get folks together and look at whether that could be complemented by some new form of this capital corporation. But currently the existing form isn't contributing, so I would just encourage Representative Nelson to carry on a dialogue as to whether there's a new version of this that might work better than the old version, and we'll keep experimenting, and meanwhile let's clean this one off the books would be my contribution to the perspective.
Okay. So no more discussion. So Representative Nelson, what is your intention? You want to
My intention would be to
formally move to
I would formally move to amend this bill to extend it.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, do we need to make a roll call to do that?
Or you can ask if there are any objections to the motion, or you can do a roll call.
Okay, if there are any objection to for this bill?
Yes,
Mr.
Chair.
Okay.
I would object to that, and for the reasons that Vice Chair Merkley has stated, I believe that there are merits to this, but again, it's been tried for some time and was not successful. So
okay.
I would ask for a roll call if we...
Okay. And it seems to me you don't have enough vote, but you only have a roll call to...
Yes, please.
Okay. And any other discussion on this matter? Okay. If not, the roll call for the move from the Representative Nelson.
Representative Dowling.
Nay.
Representative Merkley.
Respectfully, no.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
No.
Representative Bruin.
As well, respectfully, no.
Representative Buckley.
Respectfully, no.
And Chair Lynn.
Respectfully, no. Thank you. Motion defeated. And then,
may I make a motion?
Yes, please.
I move that we move House Bill 2161 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Vice Chair Bruin, that the move the House Bill 2161 that with a due pass recommendation to the floor. Any other discussions? If not, we have a roll call again. Okay.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Dahlin.
Aye.
Representative Merkley.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
And nay.
Representative Bryan.
Aye.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Chair Lynn.
Aye. So motion passed. And the Annie, Representative Nelson, you like to carry this bill?
I certainly would.
Wow. You know.
Let that stay on the record.
In an affirmative way.
Well, in that case, I think Representative Merkley is far more inclined to see the good of this bill in some way more closely to mine than any other representative.
Okay, since you commended Vice Chair Merkley, would you volunteer to carry the bill?
Maybe we should vote again.
Mr. Chairman, I would if you'd like me to. I'm trying to avoid in my role as minority leader carrying bills. But if you'd like me to, I'd be happy to. But I'd like to give an opportunity to our freshman to carry a bill.
Freshman? Which freshman you want to
take? Any of them that would be delighted to do so.
Okay. So any freshman volunteer we have?
I'll be happy to do it, too.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Riley will carry the bill, House Bill 2161. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Appreciate it. All right. And what's the next one? Okay. I'd like to open a work session again.
Let's do a hearing first.
Okay, I'd like to hear the public hearing. And what did you say? Open a public hearing. I'd like to open a public hearing. House Bill 2173.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2173 requires the Department of Consumer Business Services to adopt rules for the use of digital signatures by state agencies to protect the security, integrity, and confidentiality of state business transactions conducted by electronic commerce. It provides that business conducted by e-commerce can be audited. It repeals the Digital Signature Act, and it repeals the Registry of International Trade Consultants.
Is this coming from where? Which committee?
This
general government.
General government, right?
Yes, this did
have general government.
Correct.
With a two-pass recommendation, right?
Yes, it had a subsequent referral to your committee.
I don't know why this one came to us, but since it's, we got it,
there you have it.
Who do we have? Okay, again, welcome again. Thank you very much. Could you explain that what are we doing? This House Bill 2173.
Thank you. Chair Lim, members of the committee, good morning. Again, for the record, Floyd Lanter, Administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities within the Department of Consumer and Business Services. I appeared this morning to request the committee support for House Bill 2173. The bill before you is designed to remove unnecessary government regulation of two areas of commerce in Oregon that are relatively small. The bill calls for the elimination of the optional registration requirements for what is known as digital signature certification authorities with the department. The bill also deletes the requirement that the department maintain a voluntary registry of international trade consultants who assist private businesses that are seeking international markets. With respect to the first portion, digital signatures certification authorities, in 1997, the legislature adopted legislation to provide oversight and ensure accountability of the digital signature certification authorities. The law provided the director authority to certify persons who issue digital certificates that verify signatures and transactions on the Internet. This can be quite technical, but essentially, digital certificates are electronic credentials that bind the identity of the certificate owner or holder to a pair of what are known as electronic keys, a public key and a private key, that are used to encrypt and sign information digitally. The intent of the digital certificate use is to enhance the use of the Internet and electronic commerce by providing an assurance that the person who sent the document is the person they claim to be and that the document has not been altered since its transmission. As a part of the legislation, the law created a registration requirement with the department. Registration is optional, and the law created no meaningful enforcement authority. Oregon Revised Statute 192, Section 845.3 provides in part, nothing in this section shall be construed to compel any public or private entity to participate in the director certification program as authorized in this section in order to verify digital signatures. In the 7 years the law has been in effect, we've received no consumer complaints. We've had very few companies opt to register with us. In 2002, we had two firms registered with us. In 2003 and 2004, we had one registrant. The bill will have no impact on e-commerce or the ability to provide authenticated digital signatures. To the extent that digital signatures still provide a meaningful service in e-commerce, their effectiveness will not be changed. The Department of Administrative Services regards digital signatures as a subset of the electronic signatures provisions of the Uniform Electronic Transactions Act. Additionally, a federal e-authentication policy provides additional standards. This bill simply eliminates the option of registering with the department, an option that few, if any, have chosen to take. Language in the current digital signature law that requires the Department of Administrative Services to oversee the use of digital signatures by state agencies is retained and transferred to Chapter 84 of the Oregon Revised Statutes. The rest of the law is eliminated. The department feels that it's good government to eliminate laws from the books that serve no purpose and only serve to confuse. With respect to the second portion of this bill, international trade consultants, the 2001 legislature enacted Oregon Revised Statute, Chapter 705, Section 730-732, which directed the department to establish a voluntary registry of international trade consultants. Eligible registrants are those involved with finding international markets for private businesses or assisting them with international laws or market practices. In 2002, we had two registrants. 2003 and 2004, we had one. Program is strictly voluntary. It requires a candidate to submit some background information and pay an initial fee of $100. A renewal fee of $100 provides for a two-year renewal term. There are no provisions or mechanisms for verifying the accuracy of the information provided by the registrants. The registry simply serves as a locator tool for possible businesses looking for a consultant. Given the lack of participation in the registry by international trade consultants in Oregon, the registry appears to provide no meaningful service. This law would be another good candidate for government streamlining, and the international trade consultants registry should be eliminated. These two programs do have small ending fund balances, which collectively total about $3,800, which would be transferred to the general fund. The bill is fee neutral, and we're not aware of any opposition to the bill. I would respectfully request that the committee support the bill and send it to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Lenter, who was the author of this bill?
Chair Lynn.
Originally.
Okay. Representative Nelson, it's a pre-session file by the department, the governor.
No. Who in 1997, who was the sponsor of this bill?
Chair Lamb, Representative Nelson, excuse me. And the 1997 portion, which relates to international trade consultants, digital signatures, I do not know who authored that.
How about the internet follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, follow-up.
How about the 2001 legislation on the international trade consultant?
And Chair Lim, Representative Nelson, the 2001 portion of it, I believe, was sponsored by Representative Yee at that time, Senator Yee at that time.
Any other questions? Okay. And this is a public hearing, right?
Yes.
Okay. Any other person like to testify on this bill? If not, we will close the public hearing and then open a work session on the House Bill 2173. And do we have a motion? Members?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we move House Bill 2173 to the floor with a consent recommendation.
All right, and the Vice Chair Bruin and move to adopt the House Bill 21 with a two-pass recommendation to the floor. Did I say correctly?
Mr. Chairman, I think you need a separate motion on due pass or not, and then assuming that you have an unanimous due pass, you could then entertain a second motion for consent if you wish to consider that.
Okay. Then I'll withdraw my first motion and put in a new motion that we move that House Bill 2173, we move to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, and Vice Chair Bruin and move the House Bill 2173 with our two pass recommendations to the floor. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I'm going to support this bill, but I'm going to go on the record that I rarely ever do anything that Senator Yee has had anything to do with. I go against what she thought was right. I consider her the most brilliant woman to have ever served in this legislature.
Thank you. I feel the same way. I respect her. She has been a respected member in the past many years, and I appreciate that, and so noted. Okay, if there's no discussion, please call the roll.
Representative Merkley.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
Aye.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Dowling.
Aye.
Chair Lim.
Aye. And unanimously, that they passed.
Mr. Chair. Now, thank you. Now can I move that we change this to a consent rather than a due pass?
Mr. Chairman, what you would do is put this on, just move to put this on the consent calendar, and you can consider that because you have a unanimous vote on the due pass. So that's what the form of the motion should be, is to place it on the consent calendar.
Okay.
So moved.
So moved. Okay, any volunteers to carry this bill?
No need.
You need a vote on the consent. If you put on the consent calendar, then there's no carrier.
No carrier? Oh, then we'll shall.
This motion passes.
Okay.
His motion is to put this on the consent calendar.
So what I'm supposed to do with this?
You could just call for a vote on the consent motion.
At the floor or here?
Here, right here.
Here?
Yeah.
How do I say it? Okay. Then just adopt it if there's no objection. Okay. Any objection to consent? Did I say correct? Right. Okay. If none, then it's consented. Then what I'm supposed to do?
You're welcome, everybody.
Okay. We close the work session on the House Bill 2173. Thank you for helping me. All right. I'd like to open a public hearing.
It's an information.
Informational public hearing on. Where's that one? Right here.
You want to call?
On the workforce issues, this is an invited testimony. I'd like to call at this time Cam Prius Bradley. Did I pronounce it correctly? Okay. Would you like to invite with you someone else, or?
Yes. Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, Chair Lim and members of the committee. For the record, I am Cam Corey Sprawley. I am the Commissioner of Community Colleges and also the Director of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. What you are receiving at this moment is an annual report on the workforce development system in Oregon. The Federal Department of Labor does require each state to produce an annual report. They require it for a small set of programs that they fund in each state. In Oregon, we choose to do a broader brush and report a combination of, or the entirety of, the workforce system under the logo of WorkSource Oregon. So what you have is what the Department of Labor requires, plus what Oregon wants to say about how well we have done in the past year. It has vignettes and success stories throughout, and in the back there is a folder that has actual performance results, and I will make note of those later in the presentation. I just wanted you to know what you were receiving in hand. With me this morning at the table is, on my left, your right, is Alita Culligan. She is the Governor's Workforce Policy Advisor. And on your left, my right, shouldn't be so hard, is Deborah Lincoln. She is the Director of the Employment Department. And they're going to help me this morning walk you through an overview of WorkSource Oregon, which is our branded name for the workforce development system. We want to thank you for the opportunity to provide you some highlights. This is by no means the in-depth story about workforce development in Oregon, and but we will share with you some highlights of the system. Okay. Okay, let's go back one. There we go. WorkSource Oregon is an evolution of a job training system. In the past, it had been primarily focused on an individual who needed to find work. And we called that a supply-side system, where you took the individual where they were and discussed with them what their skill and ability was. If they needed training, they got training, and then you went looking for an employer that would hire this person who had been trained. The evolution is that it's evolved to where you know what the employer community needs and you train workers to fit those needs. That's the term of art used now, is that it's a demand side system. Employers are able to find the work ready individuals that they need, and the system is geared to looking at the demand of the labor market and matching the individual skills. This is a map of the state of Oregon. It shows you where we have what we call one-stop centers. That's where many of the partners that deliver WorkSource services are located, often co-located together. Think about, while I use a trade name, Fred Meyer, a one-stop shopping approach. That's what we have been designing and implementing in the state, so that an individual, either individual worker or job seeker or a business, knows that there is a place they can go to get the services they need. Better catch up. The WorkSource Oregon system has served over 300,000 people last year. And that's both employers and job seekers and workers, as they have made their way to one of those work centers. How do we fund this system? A lot of federal dollars, at least in my mind, a lot of federal dollars. On this slide are the programs that are in the department that I'm the administrator for. Some are from the Department of Labor, and that would be WIA Title I-B assessment and training dollars. Title II is adult education and family literacy. That's also in our department. We also have the youth, the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps to help at-risk youth have a positive experience with school and conservation at the same time. Other federal funding streams that support the WorkSource Oregon system are administered by the Department of Human Services, the Department of Education, and the Employment Department, including labor exchange programs and labor market information programs. And we aren't finished yet. There are still some funding streams, and these are primarily state funding streams that are dedicated, if not in whole, in part, to supporting moving workers and into work making sure the employers have the workers that they need. And that includes funds that are in the Department of Economic and Community Development, funds that are received at the 17 community colleges around the state, both the university system and K-12.
Okay, Cam?
Sir.
Could you tell me what's the total amount of the fund? You just said a lot, but...
Chair Lim,
and also state fund.
In the state fund?
And state fund. Yeah.
To my figuring, it's about $200 million annually.
$200 million. That's a federal.
That's federal and at least a portion of the state dollars, yes.
So what percentage of the federal fund?
It's 100% of the federal funds that the state receives.
Oh, okay. So.
But I'm not in that 200 million figure is not all of the funds that a community college receives. And that's about $400 million of biennium, at least this biennium. But we don't use all of that for the WorkSource Oregon system, so I didn't add all of it to the total.
Okay, how about the state fund?
The state funds, let's see. Chair Lim, I think it is probably to my advantage and yours that I bring you back a detailed answer to this question rather than rounding up or rounding down and being incorrect. Would that be sufficient?
That's sufficient. And then $200 a year or that's a biennium? $200 million.
Chair Lim, I believe it's it's an annual.
Annual, so $400 million in biennium.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
I would add a caveat there that many of these dollars, particularly the federal dollars, are not fungible. They are allocated to provide a particular set of services, sometimes to a very particular set of constituencies. And so it sounds like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money, but it is important to remember that it isn't fungible.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Kim, I'm amazed with that much money that I don't see our veterans on here. I mean, are none of these for this workforce development? I don't see anything on there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, on page 4, the Oregon Employment Department provides veterans...
Before you answer, could you identify your name for the record,
please? Oh, I'm sorry, Debbie Lincoln, Director of the Oregon Employment Department. We provide veterans education and training programs in conjunction with the Department of Veterans Affairs, the Military Department, and the Federal Veterans Programs, and we get about a $5 million biennial allocation to do that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Is that part of this $400 million, or is that state money, or what is that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, that's part of the $400 million, and it is federal funds.
Thank you. And that's, pardon me, Mr. Chair, that's annually or biennially or?
Mr. Chair, biennially? It is a biennial number, yes.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Bruin. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pam, in your knowledge on the federal side of the funding mechanism, how much of that is related to the programs that we've heard about, which are related to the dislocation of workers, possibly from free trade agreements?
Chair Lim, Representative Byrne, the allocation for dislocated workers is about $50 million a biennium.
15?
50.
By zero.
To the state, yes, okay. About 25 million annually. We also, the department has been very aggressive and successful in receiving national emergency grants, which are set aside at the federal level for mass closures or dislocations. And in the last biennium, we have received an additional $12 million to the state to serve those dislocated workers.
Does that come, do you have to apply for that, meaning, you know, i.e. XYZ company in Portland left, they took their facility to Mexico or Canada or what have you. That gives you the mechanism, if you will, to apply for additional funding under this?
Yes, Chair.
I mean, that's a simplification, but.
Yes.
I'm sorry for that. That's for Paul. Thanks.
Sure.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
May I just ask one more question, please? On this literacy, does that include our correctional institutes, our inmates?
Chairman Representative Nelson, yes, it does. We have contracts with five of the correctional institutions to deliver adult basic education and ESL services. Thank you.
Okay, for the members, since we have quite a few people like to testify, and if possible, please hold your questions until the presentation is over, unless it's an emergency. And so, appreciate your cooperation. Thank you. Please go ahead.
I think a good segue from how much money there is to the conversation of who manages those funds for the state and for the Department of Labor and the U.S. Department of Education. It is guided by a state-level board. It is a public-private partnership. It is actually in statute. There are also local boards that are also public-private partnerships. These boards that operate across the state are designed to ensure that the delivery decisions about who receives services is best connected to who will best gain from that service. So we try to move the decision-making closest to the customer, both to business and to workers. The boards are also responsible for the accountability. As you said, $400 million is a lot of money. They are accountable for both the use of the funds and the performance of the funds. And we have upwards of 35 different performance measures that track performance. They look at whether people have gained employment, whether they've retained that employment, and whether their wages have increased while they were employed. We also, for adults, but primarily for youth, look at whether that at risk, and that would be defined as someone who was at risk of dropping out of high school or had already dropped out of high school, was actually able to return and earn either a diploma or a GED or some other kind of certificate. So that's another of the performance measures that we track. And with that, I'd like to ask Debbie to talk to you about specific services to businesses.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'm Debbie Lincoln, the director of the Oregon Employment Department. As you're aware, the governor made it very, very clear when he first took office that we needed to pull together the programs that we've got for both workforce and for economic development. We have been working over the past in a little bit in two different streams, and we have done that, I think, very well, integrated economic development efforts as well as workforce efforts to streamline the many sources of assistance that the public sector has for business. This is the demand side of the system, our services to business, and we do this in a coordinated partnership across the state. That is, each workforce region gets together with its local economic development folks, state economic development folks, people from community colleges, from the employment department, from the Title I-B groups, the Workforce Investment Act groups, and others who work with businesses to provide these services. Some of the services that we have we are providing and have streamlined include recruiting and screening and referring the best qualified candidates to businesses for their workforce. We provide labor market data for policy decision making across the state, both by businesses and policymakers, as well as for students and anybody else who needs it. We have a labor market group that is one of the best in the nation, award-winning, and that labor market information, I'm sure you've all seen it, is critical for developing programs and targeting and focusing our services. We provide all sorts of assistance in hiring, including jobs fairs, occupational testing, tax credit information. We even provide for the smaller businesses. We provide things like facilities for interviewing, pre-screened groups of candidates for hiring, and those kinds of things. There are a number of sources of financial assistance for worker training, and you'll be hearing more about some of those later this morning. Outplacement assistance for companies who downsize, and Representative Bruin, some of that is trade-related, dislocated worker type programs, but any company that's downsizing can contact us, and we can help with getting those folks into new jobs. We have a number of opportunities, particularly through the community colleges, for delivering customized training. That is, working with a business on very specific training that business needs for its particular workforce. And there's some folks here who have some very interesting stories about how they're customizing their training. We are trying to invest strategically on high demand and emerging occupations so that the investments we make today will last as the economy changes and grows over the next few years. The second half of the thing then is the supply side, which is WorkSource for Workers, what we do for individual workers, people looking for jobs. We, of course, in the Employment Department, spend a lot of time with unemployment claimants trying to get them back to work, an excellent source of workers who have strong work histories. But we're there for anybody who needs a job, including students coming right out of school, people who want to change careers or move up in the career ladder, as well as people who are out of a job and need a job. We provide all sorts of job search assistance, again, the labor market information on careers, what kind of salaries people can earn, what's a growing occupation. We help them with resume development. We help. We teach interviewing skills, life skills kinds of things. We provide skill evaluation, assessment, career counseling through the community colleges and the Title I-B folks. And, of course, the whole education and training systems are available to the system as we try to guide people into occupations that will serve them well. One tool I do want to mention is our iMatch Skills tool. This is something fairly new. We launched it to the World Wide Web this last fall. It's a web-based, skills-based job matching system. It's Monster.com, much improved for Oregon, I think. And it's free to anybody who wants it. The job listings that are on there are free. People, both job seekers and business people who are looking for workers can use this system from their homes, from their offices, any time of the day or night. They can manage their own accounts, or they can connect with the WorkSource system to help them manage their accounts, there's job searches, and there's their recruitment efforts. It has become, I think will become the electronic basis for the whole WorkSource system as we move into the future. And if you haven't seen it, I encourage you to go to that website and take a look at it. It's a very exciting new tool. I believe it's back to Kim.
We went very quickly by those three success stories. We'll note them. Yes, we have some actual real-life people that will be joining the table here in a moment, so we can spend a lot of time on the slides there. Wanted to talk to you a little bit about the services that have been delivered in the last year. This slide does a nice job of giving you sort of the universe of the size of people, both businesses and workers or job seekers, the customers. We are, I think, collectively quite proud of the number of Oregonians that are recognizing WorkSource Oregon as a place where they can go get useful information about either expanding their skills, getting skills in order to get a new job, or just get a referral because they don't really need any other help but that. You will see that average wage rose 82 cents an hour. It doesn't seem remarkable, but in this economy, we believe it is. We have 86% of the adults who leave the program are employed, and 87% of dislocated workers who come to the program leave. We would note that when you thumb through the back of that annual report, you will notice that dislocated workers tend to, not surprisingly, leave a job and have a difficult time getting their next job that pays at the same rate. We always look at a goal of returning them to 90% of what they had been making, which has been somewhat of a struggle for Oregon in the last several years, not surprisingly. We also have maxed out our community college system in the delivery of adult basic education, English as a second language, serving thousands and thousands of students and still having thousands waiting in line because we simply don't have the capacity to serve. More on the services delivered, these are 6,000 Oregon workers have been trained through grants that were provided to their employers, and Lita will give you some deeper knowledge about those grants. They are delivered by 15 workforce response teams. We have deployed teams around the state, actually the teams formed themselves, and they have resources from the state. They've invested $3 million in training at the ground level. I'm not going to read that entire slide to you. I would just note that we are making progress every day in returning people to work and helping businesses hire the people that they need. And with that, I'll turn it over to Lita to talk about the governor's direction.
Okay, before you go, any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you very much for doing everything you can to help people find jobs. Where are the new jobs, or where were they? Oh, for the 70,000 placed. Where did they go? Could we have a recap of that, please?
Representative Nelson, I can certainly bring you back that information. They went into many, many different industries. We have seen a real surge of dislocated workers moving into healthcare professions, just as one, for instance, many returning to manufacturing.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
I appreciate knowing that by county as well, in case Representative DeLune gets more jobs than we are in Yamhill County. I want to know about it. He just walked in. Too bad. And also, Mr. Chair, I'd like to know, what are we doing for those 64,000 people who didn't get jobs?
We placed
71%, but to me, there's 64,000 out there without any job, and I think we need to keep that bill we didn't pass earlier
that I was not supported in to build new economic development. So we have places for these 64,000 people. I'm curious, what are they doing? How are they living? Please, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm Rita Colligan, the Governor's Workforce Policy Advisor. Thank you for inviting my comments today as well. When we started our presentation, Cam talked about the evolution of the system, and I'm here to talk a little bit about some of the direction that we've been headed in the last 2 years to try to move it more toward demand in the marketplace. And so I'm going to give you a little bit of a brief overview, because we do have some guests here who we want you to hear from, who can tell their stories better than I can. But the governor, when he was elected, set up a task force on workforce development to take a look at the system that we've just described to you and to make some recommendations on how to improve it. And we really got three main focus areas from that committee, and the governor endorsed those and said, please go forth and try to move the system in this direction. And those are, one, first of all, to streamline services. And in that, he really meant making it easier for workers and businesses to find out what's out there. You heard about the multitude of funding streams and different types of programs, and what we've really tried to do, and I think we've put before you today, is to show this as an entire system called WorkSource Oregon. So regardless of whether the community colleges is offering the service, or the employment department is offering the service, or it's offered by a community-based organization in Roseburg or in Gresham, that's all part of the Workforce Oregon WorkSource Oregon system. Part of that streamlining has also been to set up a website and make it easier for people to find services. So you can go to the website, click on your region, find out where your WorkSource Oregon centers are, or to use some of the electronic tools that we've talked about today as well to do the job matching. Second, connecting more of our workforce system to economic development. And both Cam and Debbie talked about this, and I can go into a little bit more detail in a minute. And then third, expanding services for businesses and incumbent workers. What we've had in our workforce training system has predominantly been services for workers. We do have the very exemplary services of the employment department that have been focused on business, but the bulk of the system has really been about helping workers get back to work. What the governor heard in his task force is that many of the workers who are in jobs already need new skills to stay employed. And so some of the efforts we've spent our time on in the last year or two has been trying to help workers who have low skills, who are currently employed, move up in the career ladder. And we've been providing some resources to companies to help with that. So again, streamlining services. I mentioned some already. The branding of WorkSource Oregon. Debbie mentioned the iMatch system. We are also stressing more co-location of services at the regional level, so that customers, when they go into a WorkSource Oregon center, can get all those different services we described in one location. And then I want to really stress that even though in some states they have consolidated a lot of these programs into a single agency or have a lot of different structures for delivering the service, in Oregon we have been working very effectively through what we call our Workforce Policy Cabinet. So that group meets monthly and talks about how do we continue to streamline services, how do we increase co-location, how do we increase coordination, especially between our workforce system and economic development, because we do see this, as Representative Nelson described, as a driver for economic growth, and we have been trying to help use this system to create some of those other 64,000 jobs that we need. The governor's direction number two about connecting to the economy, Debbie mentioned our labor market information. What we've been doing with that at the regional level is we've organized, as was mentioned, these workforce response teams. And those teams are now charged in each region of the state at looking at their local economy and trying to determine where their job growth is now, where their job growth will be, and then how to prepare people for jobs, for where the jobs will be in the future. So we are using a lot of this labor market information centered around clusters, which is the economic paradigm that we're using right now, in each region of the state, and trying to identify opportunities as well as growth areas.
Question, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Dallin.
When identifying workforce needs, in our community or the county I live in, I represent some 8 counties, probably, and we do have people in place at the community college. And the community college has become a huge factor. In fact, we're very proud, and I just ran downstairs to testify on some of the things that we do in Wasco County. But one of the reasons that Google came to our county is because we had the community college. We could identify the type of workers that Google needed. We could set up the programs to train those workers. And right now, tuition at our community college is going to skyrocket. And I would recommend a message to the Workforce and Policy Cabinet is that we consider the community college. I would allow the governor's efforts on shovel-ready sites. Big issue in getting Google. The employment office, at least I can testify in Wasco County, excellent. But we have 2 other areas that are not mentioned in the picture. And in rural Oregon, it's the extension agent and the community college. The extension agent will see to it that chairs get to market in the right configuration. The extension agent will see to it that the proper wheat is grown, and the community college will change people. So I would plead with you, when the governor talks about economy, don't leave the community college out.
Representative Dillon, thank you very much. They are a key partner, in fact, the most critical partner, I would say, in our workforce training system. So thank you. To continue, I just wanted to recognize also that we are working with many labor and business associations as well. When we try to identify the needs of an industry, we are actually working with the Software Association, with the food processors, with the wood products folks, so that we can make sure that our job training programs are connected to their needs. And then also, one of the other directions I mentioned was to try and set up the opportunity for incumbent workers to receive training. And so the governor did establish by executive order the Employer Workforce Training Fund. That means that of the dollars that Cam described, some of our federal dollars the governor has discretion over, he redirected $6 million of those dollars a year into this fund to be awarded to companies to upgrade the skills of their existing workers. And we are using the workforce response teams in the regions to determine which companies will receive those opportunities. So far to date, we have provided through the Workforce Training Fund, 159 projects in all 15 workforce regions have been funded. Approximately 8,000 individuals are to be trained, and we have a list here for you of some of the opportunity areas in terms of industry, and I hope that that also helps Representative Nelson understand where some of those job growth is. We see these as key industries in our state. They're aligned with our economic development strategies, and one of the opportunities that really has come forward as a result of doing these employer training grants is that companies are actually creating jobs as a result of doing training and retaining jobs as a result of doing training. So, for example, we've given a grant to a company who might have located those jobs in another community. Google is an example of recruitment. These are all for Oregon-based companies. When they do add the new jobs because they can capture a new market or take on a new technology, train workers for a new technology, then we are using the supply side of the system to bring those new workers into that company. So you can see the connection there between helping with training and driving some job growth and then using our systems that help prepare workers for jobs to fill the new jobs. I would like to take the opportunity to bring forward some of the companies who have received these training grants to tell you a little bit about their company and how the grants have helped them.
It's Jim, right?
Yes.
May I ask a question?
Representative Bunker.
Thanks. First, a comment to follow up on my colleague's comment. Community colleges being a critical partner, is it not counterproductive then to be cutting the community college's budget in the proposed budget this year? Where I come from in Southern Oregon, Oregon is the same as Eastern Oregon. Every Chamber of Commerce, every business person I talk to pleads for the community colleges. So I guess it's more of a comment than a question. I believe it's counterproductive. I believe we need to address that. The other quick question I have is in terms of a marketing effort, in terms of letting people know about the services, these are tremendous services. You don't have to explain the whole thing to me right now, but is there a marketing plan to let businesses and citizens know of the services available? And if so, if we could be provided with a copy of that marketing plan, I'd appreciate it.
Chair Lim, Representative Buckley, we do have a communications committee with a marketing plan, and we have some resources that we've put into that plan, and we do have an active implementation going on right now.
Will we be able to see, yes, have access to that?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We want to know that I concur what the Representative Buckley mentioned, that the community college is one of the vital components in the economic development in our state, and we all support the community college, possibly more fundings. So I just want to put that record of my support of the community college. I'm sure we all are. Before we move on, where the name Works come from? It is unique to our state, or any other state has the same name?
Chair Lim, thank you for asking. WorkSource Oregon is unique to Oregon, but WorkSource, we also have WorkSource Washington, and several other states have adopted that brand as well. Although many states have selected their own brand name that's different from WorkSource, we chose WorkSource through an extended committee process, and we felt that actually having a name that had more national recognition would be beneficial for us with our more strategic economic development work as well, that companies that were coming into Oregon would understand what it was when they got here, or companies that were here, if they had locations in other states, would also identify with that brand name.
Okay, thank you very much. And I have one more question. And what is the total approximate cost of administration? I'm sure it's going to be high to do that. Do you have any idea how much it cost to administer of those programs?
Chair Lim, I can offer that for Department of Labor and Department of Education programs, they have a cap for administration, and for the Department of Labor at the state level, it's capped at 5%.
Okay. Did you say Department of Education?
Yes.
How about the others?
I will bring you back a detail of what the administration costs are.
Yes. I just want to figure out what the cost to do that, and actually how much dollars going into that actual program to have the finding jobs. Right?
Thank you.
If not, then let's
move
on.
May I introduce our guests?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Okay, today we have with us Craig and Kim Wilmus, who are with Metal Innovations in Aurora. They're in the aerospace industry. And also Nolan Johnson from Synetics, which is in Portland, and it's in the high-tech industry. They're going to tell you a little bit about their companies and how the grants have helped them.
You're welcome.
Good morning.
And please identify yourself before you speak.
I'm Kim Wilmus with Metal Innovations, and we started our company about 8.5 years ago in our garage. We decided that we wanted to do air carrier work. My husband had been in structures for air carriers for probably about 12 years, I guess, at that time. And our first contract was with Horizon Air. We modded 80 of their overwing emergency exits. Customers were complaining about the whistling sound when they sat by the door, and they were having major problems with the contour after multiple repairs in-house. They hadn't developed a way to really keep the contour of the door, and we came up with processes to do that. We built another facility at our residence, expanded that once, and then outgrew that and moved into Canby into an industrial park that was about 10,000 square feet. And at that time, probably at our peak, we were at about 18 employees, and we were doing all air carrier work. We were not very diversified. Most everything we had done was in the metals end of repair. A lot of the aircraft were going to composites. So we started to purchase equipment to go into the composite side, but the training is extremely expensive. And just air carrier training, anything to do with air carrier corporate aircraft is very expensive. Then 9/11 hit. We weren't diversified. We had to, within about 3 months of that happening, you know, we had to lay off all of our employees. We ended up having to sell our residence at the bank's request because it was kind of either move, you know, and give us some of this money, you know, it's try to pay off some of your loans, you know, because we had really strapped ourselves to try to keep our employees employed as long as possible. And it was either that or the business. So we sacrificed that for the business. And then we were fortunate enough to get an SBA disaster relief loan. We were one of 28 companies in Oregon that received that. So at that time, we kept a staff, you know, a very minimal staff, you know, that helped kind of keep checks and balances in place. We placed the rest of our staff through favors through companies we'd done business with for years, so we didn't leave anyone hanging out to dry. And then we decided that we had to diversify. So we slowly tried to build our services up, still really lacking in the training area. And, you know, just over the years, we ended up actually taking a kind of a risk in a way, but we knew we had to diversify, and we moved out to the Aurora State Airport. We had no support. You know, we tried to find funding options to help us with the move, which we had to take about $90,000 out of our cash flow for that move. Since that time, our business has actually doubled in size from our highest point, you know, pre-9/11. And we're up to 15 full-time employees and 6 part-time employees. We went through different training options with workforce development, you know, and put together a grant package. We went through and closed our entire shop down for a week, did advanced composite training with all of our employees. And, you know, it was something that they hadn't really had any chance of having any training in. We were able to go through another grant opportunity, and with matching funds, we put in a composite clean room, and now we're pretty set. We've got a couple other areas we're trying to build up a few more services in, but it's really diversified our staff as a small business. Without this money, we wouldn't have had an opportunity to grow and diversify. We've created 3 jobs, have 2 others we're posting at this time since the grant has been awarded to us, and we've retained 2 jobs. I don't know if you have some other things to add.
One thing that I want to add is,
Would you identify yourself and speak too close to the mic?
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Craig Wellness, and I'm with Metal Innovations. One thing that I wanted to add and echo what Kim was saying about the good jobs, and the reason that we seek the training dollars is, with the Federal Aviation Administration, they mandated a total rewrite of what we operate under, which is a 145 repair station environment. And under that mandate, for us to compete or go out of business in the training sector, they're mandating that in each different type of aircraft type or in in the
services.
Yeah, and the different services that we're doing. The they're giving us a lead time of about 12 months, I think, is what we have through 06 to be fully trained in each of those areas. If we don't have training in those areas, then we're going to have to reduce our services of what we have to offer now. And so that's one thing I really wanted to add is, you know, just with the Federal Aviation Administration and what they're mandating a small company like Metal Innovations to do. And without these dollars, we wouldn't have been able to compete and either really scale back and shrink or just go away entirely.
But some of the other training that we received through the grant was for individual aircraft. And just so you have an idea of what the cost is, per aircraft, per employee, it's about $6,000 to train someone. So, you know, and that's on Citation aircraft or any of the regional aircraft, which is primarily what our business is. And I brought some photos along. I didn't know if you guys would be interested in seeing them. I was going to do a slide for you, but sometimes things don't really work too well when you try to plug them into someone else's system. So I just printed some things out. This is just this first one, caravan maintenance. This was training we received. It actually expanded our knowledge in the caravans, we have a 5-year contract with FedEx to maintain different parts of their aircraft, and it really gave us a lot more opportunity in that area. This was for our composite area. This is actually a fixture that's a lot quicker fixture that was learned through the ABRSH training that we provided all of our employees, which is a high-level composite training. And this is a door that they manufactured from that and some gutters for Sikorsky aircraft, which are operated by Ericsson Aircrane. This is a gentleman, Tim, who is just really a great engineer but never had the opportunity to have an education in that, had a lot of talent. He went through, we're sending him to Clackamas Community College. We actually have 3 people. We were only originally going to send 2. We had another one on the shop floor that's an AMP mechanic. He's always just done the mechanic side, had an interest in engineering. They developed this fixture that's actually cut several hundred hours off of this project. And that was his first project after going through a couple of classes through Clackamas. This is just kind of some lean manufacturing stuff that we've done. It kind of has some before and after pictures, what things look like. We put one of our employees, Norm, in here. He's had some training in lean and came up with some ideas and has implemented those. We've seen about a 5% cost reduction in our shop due to the lean training that was provided through this grant. And I've got several of those. You guys will be shocked when you see some of these cabinets. But it really is amazing when someone has to, you know, can actually go and see when something is missing. You know, how much time that saves on the shop floor. It's also preparing us because we've been working, putting together a group called Aerospace Diversity Group, which is woman-owned, and it's a clustering group of woman-owned, minority-owned, and small businesses in the aerospace industry, and we're managing contracts. We've been working with Boeing for a couple of months on putting this together. We do a lot of integration in our shop. I mean, being a small shop, we're probably around a $2 million company, and we sub out to local businesses about $600,000 in work. That's about what we integrate in. We found that it saves our customers money. We still are able to keep our margins where they need to be. And all of that ties into this lean training. It's absolutely critical. If you can't do it yourself as far as knowing where the voids are and the inefficiencies, you can't expect other companies to be able to perform for you. So the job creation goes way beyond, I think, what we have. I mean, if you look outside at the probably 50 to 100 different companies that we sub work through, you know, it creates jobs in those areas also.
Representative Dallum.
Yes, with the grant, mechanically, you applied to the state. What was the turnaround time on the grant? You decided you need the training when you had the grant in hand.
We turned it in at the end of, and I've got to think of which date it was. It was at the end of September, and we had an answer in October. And I'll tell you, we've applied for a couple of different grants. These guys have done a phenomenal job. Their accountability is great. You know, they are very precise on what they request from you. Some of the other grants are not that clear, and the staff is great to work with. You know, I've been really, really pleased. Sometimes it's like, oh, gosh, I got some more paperwork, you know, to fill out for this. But I know when it comes down to accountability, there is no question that I have to be concerned about, you know, things not being accounted for either through the grant group, you know, or through us, because they've made sure everything is covered.
One more question. With the community college, did you go to the community college with a specific training program, or did you send your employee to a general community college course?
We've done both. Actually, there was a trained person that was a professor at Clackamas Community College that came on site. We discussed what our employees needed because they were kind of at different levels, and it was primarily for SolidWorks, which is a higher-end engineering program, and it's one of the newer ones that a lot of aerospace companies are using. And he came on site, and then we ended up having some training there and also then sending people through Clackamas through some standardized courses.
One more follow-up?
One more follow-up.
Then did the employer pay for that? Did your company pay for that? Did the state? How was that paid for?
Both. Actually, it's kind of because of some of these other trainings being able to be paid for through the grant, and of course you've got matching funds. It's not like it's free because we got a $49,000 grant. We have a $63,000 match for that grant that our company has put forth, you know, in different ways, you know, trying to pay for that. A lot of that training, you know, has been because we were able to have some of the other training funded, we have funded it as a company. We try to pay for all the training for our employees if it's, you know, especially for the betterment of their skill levels, you know, which really does help the company out in the long run. But, you know, for the most part, it's been paid through the grant, but we've covered, you know, the wages and things like that to make it possible for them to be able to attend.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Well, if you think I'm going to miss this opportunity, Mr. Chair.
I don't think so.
I'm sure that it's not that important. Is it Wilmus? Wilmus. Like W-I-L-M-U-S?
M-E-S.
M-E-S. I doubt if it's important to you. It is to me because aviation is where I spent a great portion of my life, and I'm sure you know Evergreen. And we do operate Sikorsky's too, not just Erickson. Excuse me. I'm wondering, first of all, I just want to say I'm so proud of you. And I just think this is great and incredible. And I wanted to remind you, we have a huge facility at the Portland Airport that it would be wonderful to move you and 200 employees into.
You know, I'd like to tell you, we actually at one time had looked at that facility. We'll have coffee and we'll talk about it.
Yes, let's talk about it and move on. That would be terrific and great. I'm curious why you're not working with the aviation schools. You're not working with Lane and Portland with their aviation divisions. I happen to have a daughter who's an A&P mechanic, so that's why.
Never give me a call because we're hiring right now.
But, I mean, are you working with those aviation divisions?
We hadn't been that involved with it, and we had a young man that's been a part-time worker for us. He's graduating from high school this year. We've been helping him get into the Portland Community College A&P program because most of our employees have graduated from either that or the Lane Community College, you know, programs. And so they had asked us at that time, they said, you know, maybe you would be interested in participating. I guess they have kind of a group that gets together and is, you know, gives advice on the program and things. But we really haven't, you know, I guess we haven't had a request to do that.
Okay. What's that?
Jim Stewart.
Well, we did with one employee that is a full-time employee. We brought him in as a part-time when he was going to school. And we have talked to the community college if they have other people, you know, that are in the program that maybe need some hours after work. They could come in as an intern, a paid intern. And we did that with one employee several years ago and hired him full-time at that time.
Okay.
When he completed college.
Just as a follow-up, I just once again want to commend you for your efforts, and you make us proud.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And please identify your name.
Hi, my name is Nolan Johnson. I'm here representing Synetic Solutions. We are about 200 people strong in semiconductor manufacturing, working out of Gresham, Oregon.
Gresham, Oregon.
Gresham, Oregon.
Welcome.
Thank you. Of our employees, we draw employees for our manufacturing facility everywhere from Scappoose to McMinnville to Salem to the Portland metropolitan area. Okay. All these people are coming to Gresham to work on a daily basis.
All right. And
that includes a very diverse workforce. We have on our manufacturing floor of 75 employees that work in manufacturing on the floor, we have 6 languages represented.
Okay.
So we have a very highly diverse workforce and a very capable group of people doing their job. In our industry, in semiconductor, working in 300 millimeter wafers and making wafer handler systems that then get sold to companies like Applied Materials or Novellus or other capital equipment manufacturing companies, we find ourselves in a unique position. We have to have a very highly skilled workforce and a group of people that can work very well in close to our engineers. We can't outsource this very easily, which is actually a good thing for Portland. And our customers are generally from outside the region, so we find ourselves bringing dollars into the economy from places like Austin, Texas, or the Bay Area, or from overseas. So from that perspective, we feel like we're in a place where we're actually contributing a lot of outside dollars into the economy. Add to that, the company is currently right at the point where we're about to make a profit. Depending upon how the dollars are spent, where the expenses are, and how a sale gets placed, we're either profitable or not. And that puts us at a crux for the whole overall growth of the company. That's where the training comes into place for us. We have people who have suffered through the downturn and continue to do their job in manufacturing at an incredible level with a very highly diverse background. And when you go out there and you ask them what their credentials are today, other than being able to do the job because they do it every day, you find out that they don't have ESL certification. They don't speak the language. They don't have GED. They actually couldn't be hired today for the job they're doing if they came in off the door, off the street today. So this grant is allowing us to get those people up to a point where they are fully qualified for the job they're doing and then hireable into similar jobs elsewhere in the community, bringing up their wages to a living wage, making an environment where they can be much more involved in their community through self-confidence and through skills. And then also, it is our hope, keeping them with us so that their knowledge of what we do in our highly specialized industry stays with us and moves up through the organization over time. Sort of like a farm team. Then we can pull in new people at an entry-level position and have them train under these knowledgeable people. That's really where we're going with our grant. That's really where we're going with our money. The company is willing to put about $120,000 to $140,000 worth of their own money into this to match up to about a $75,000 to $100,000 grant in order to accomplish this. So this is a very important and emotionally tied program for us at Synetics, because I have people like one of my shift supervisors who is a Cuban refugee, a boat person, who taught college in Cuba. And now he works as a manufacturing supervisor because he doesn't have the credentials to get a higher job than that. And so I wake up every day going to work excited about this grant because I'm going to help some people change their lives.
Thank you very much. We do appreciate what you are doing. That's a real winner. Not only in Gresham County, but statewide. And appreciate that very much.
You're very welcome.
Any questions? Representative Dallam?
Yes, you mentioned ESL, English as a second language, and the graduate equivalent GED. When you got your grant, what percentage of your grant and company match money is used on ESL and GED programs? Do you know?
Based on what we put forth for a budget, it's a large chunk of it. And it's going to be around, all told, including grant money and what we're going to contribute as a company match, about $85,000, if I recall correctly. Most of that is in wages that we're going to pay for the training.
And then the education itself, that's done at a community college?
Yes, absolutely. We're contracting through Mount Hood Community College, ESL, and Adult Basic Learning Services to provide our training on site at the end of our shift to the people who need the training.
And you use the grant to pay wages. Who pays tuition to the community college?
We're using the community college to do the administration. We're actually contracting directly with an instructor who's going to come on site.
They come on site.
Do this just for us, tailored to our specific needs for our audience, and do the training in an effective way so that they're getting ESL training, not generic ESL training, but specific to technical work like we do.
And if the tuition to the community college goes up, you'll be able to help less people. Logical assumption or faulty assumption?
You know, this is not being done, as I understand this is not being administered directly through open enrollment type tuition. And we're actually contracting with the instructor to come in.
Fixed price.
Yeah.
Good.
So we have a fixed price on that. Although it is really important for us to want to make sure that we're putting that money back into the local educational institutions whenever possible.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Is it Nolan?
That's right.
And I didn't get your last name.
Johnson.
Johnson. And the name of your company is Synetics?
That's right. Synetics.
And how old is this company?
Synetics is about 7 years old. Their history is they were originally incorporated as a division of Hunt Air in Tigard and made a move out to Gresham and a name change along with some outside investment about 3 years ago.
Okay. Well, I would just like to follow up, Mr. Chair, and I just want to tell you that I'm really proud of you. And thank you for all you're doing, and keep building, and we'll have another Microsoft here. And good. We need it.
We all are proud of you. Thank you. All right. There are four more people to testify. And then the leader, why don't you introduce them?
Chair Lim, thank you for the opportunity to bring a few more guests in to speak with you. I just wanted to clarify one other thing about some of the work that's being delivered here to companies is through the customized training departments of the community colleges. So that's where it's not a tuition-based service, but more of a contracted service to the college. They have a department for customized training. And also about of the grants, we have, you heard two stories. We told you we had 159 projects. That's really, we would have 159 companies coming in here talking with you if we had the time. About 50% of the training has gone to community colleges that has been contracted to date. So we allow the company to decide to select their own training provider. And this, I mean, we have some that's gone to universities as well, some that's gone to private, proprietary, et cetera, and some that's been conducted in-house, but about half of it's gone to the community colleges, mostly through customized training.
Okay.
And what we have to finish our presentation, we have a couple more pieces here. When we talked about the Employer Workforce Training Fund, much of the money has gone directly to companies for these kinds of investments that you heard about. But we've also made some strategic investments at the state level based on where we have large occupational gaps. So we've looked at where do we have jobs going unfilled, and how do we get people prepared for those jobs as quickly as possible. And so we have a couple of people to talk with you first about our healthcare project, and also we're following that, I'd like to have you hear from Ron Fox, who's with the Department of Community College, I mean, the Department of Economic and Community Development. I'm sorry, OECDD, the initials are not coming out right. And also Greg Thomas, who's with the Software Association of Oregon. So they will follow these wonderful speakers. Who we have here is Molly Moore, who is the governor's healthcare workforce coordinator, and Joe Bell, who is with the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, to talk with you about our healthcare project.
Okay, before you go, please keep that in mind. We chair intends to adjourn around 10:30, if by all means, if possible. So appreciate it.
Thank you. Chair Lynn, Representative, okay. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Molly Moore, and I am the Governor's Healthcare Workforce Initiative Coordinator. And I'm sure you're aware that the healthcare sector is not a traditional traded sector industry. However, a strong healthcare infrastructure is vital to our state's economic growth. And the health services industry is the largest employer in the state and provides many high-paying family wage jobs. And in the last session, the legislature and the Oregon Workforce Investment Board alerted the state to the crisis with regards to the healthcare workforce shortages. And from your great work, the governor asked his staff to develop a program or an initiative to look at these healthcare workforce shortage issues, and the governor's healthcare workforce initiative was created about a year ago. And today we're going to provide you with a very high-level overview of the initiative, and I've asked Joe Bell to join me to really showcase this is truly a public-private partnership initiative. The governor's healthcare workforce initiative vision overall is to dramatically increase the quality and the quantity of the healthcare workforce in the state, and both addressing patient safety issues as well as expediting the training of workers. What I'd first like to talk to you about is the Oregon Simulation Alliance. And the Simulation Alliance's vision is to look at utilizing simulation to expedite the training of the healthcare workforce, and through utilizing simulation, simulations similar to the airline industry, who has for a long time utilized simulation in training. The healthcare workforce is adopting this as a method as well. And what these are high-tech, high-fidelity, full-size mannequins that actually breathe and their hearts beat, and they can basically simulate any kind of healthcare scenario, a heart attack, a stroke, any kind of crisis. They can even they even have birthing units. And so one of the biggest barriers to the healthcare workforce shortage issue is the lack of clinical sites. And what simulation can do is actually replace or supplement clinical hours. And we have raised $1 million for this initiative. And what we did was to really leverage those dollars was we went across the state to 17 locations and really helped folks to create what we called coalitions between the healthcare industry in the local area, the education provider, whether it was a community college or a public or private university, the first responders, so fire and police departments, sometimes the public health department, and then sometimes K through 12 as well. So we created these coalitions. We put an RFP on the street for folks to purchase simulation equipment, and we awarded simulation grants to 14 locations across the state. And what we are doing is really building a network of simulation centers, getting folks to share best practices, building curriculums and different scenarios that they can share, and providing training across the state with some of this funding as well. The second thing I wanted to focus on is that we're also supporting the creation of outcomes-based curriculum, and we're supporting the efforts of the Oregon Consortium for Nursing Education, which is a coalition between several community colleges and OHSU to provide a seamless course curriculum for nursing education from the associate degree through up through the bachelor's degree. There is an opt-out for the program at the associate degree level, but it allows students to go up through their bachelor's degree. And this is really important because currently there is no shared curriculum. There's different curriculums across the state. There's different prerequisites. This is forcing students to apply to so many different programs and thus take several prerequisite courses. And what this program does is expedite those nursing students through the programs. The second area that the reason this is important is it also allows students in those local community colleges that are participating to stay in their local area to receive their bachelor's degree if they want to. And this is critical in the rural communities because what ends up happening is if they leave those communities to get their bachelor's degree, then they are maybe not coming back to their community to serve their community members.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dallum.
Yes, in Grant County, they had a distance learning program with clinicals accomplished in the Grand, I believe, and Bend. OHSU has dropped that program. Is there someone to catch those students and finish that program and then offer distance learning or whatever we have in place right now for Grant, Harney, those isolated areas of Oregon?
Chair Lynn, Representative Dallin, actually Joe Bell is going to be talking about the telecommunications efforts that this initiative is addressing, but with regards to those specific students, I'm not aware. Would you add to...
For the record, Jill Bell with the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, and Chairman Representative Dallum. I am not aware, and I will obviously check on that. I'm thinking that OHSU does still offer a program through Eastern Oregon University. It's a joint program statewide with the universities. And so I would be making an assumption here, but I would think that they would be covered under that program, but I will certainly check on that for you.
Thank you very much.
I'll turn it over to you now, Joe. Thank you.
For the record, again, I'm Joe Bell, and I'm with the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, and I'm Director of Legislative Support Services for OAHHS, and I'm also one of two staff people who have been devoting an incredible amount of time to workforce issues around the state. And what I wanted to talk a little bit about is some of the work that was done by the legislature last session in passing House Bill 2577, and I am actually going to read, if you don't mind, for a quick minute,
direction that it gave, and it was to, it directed the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council to work with healthcare industry and education to develop and implement a plan to ensure that healthcare education was being offered around the state, that there was an infrastructure there in order to offer education via telecommunications, and that the healthcare community and the education community are working together. Further, after that bill passed, it became one of the points in the governor's healthcare workforce initiative, so we've spent a great deal of time working on that. And I might add that one of the other shortages that we have in healthcare is actually a shortage, a growing shortage of healthcare workforce educators. So one of the things that we have to do in order to expand the sort of pipeline for healthcare workforce education is to do whatever we can to expand the reach of the instructors that we have available. So the use of telecommunications and distance and e-learning is very important. Basically, the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, or ORTCC, has done is inventorying the telecommunications networks around the state, including the healthcare networks, K-12, community colleges, higher ed, and government networks. And their intent is to link them and fill in the gaps, as opposed to building a complete new network to deliver the programs. And then the second piece that they did was they looked at the needs of providing educational programs via distance and e-learning. And there are a lot of different requirements to provide courses that way than are traditionally used in the classroom. So they have made a recommendation of a list of things that need to be done by the legislature, boards of higher ed, healthcare partners to accomplish these goals. And actually, that piece is going to be forwarded to the governor's workforce advisory committee to work on more directly. The ORTCC itself is planning to continue to work on developing and connecting the networks around the state. And one of the things that I think is really important for this particular committee, being Trade and Economic Development, to understand that we feel that we are sort of being a little bit of groundbreakers in this effort, because once we have the links made around the state to provide healthcare workforce education, we will also be able to deliver better healthcare using telemedicine efforts, and that same infrastructure will be able to be used for economic development around the state, particularly in the rural communities. And I also like to always add a little bit of an advertisement that without healthcare in your community, you are not going to have a very good chance for economic development. So we feel that this is sort of providing extra work or extra benefit for communities around the state, and not just for the healthcare education workforce piece. And then the final thing that I wanted to let you know is that we have also introduced Senate Bill 882 this session to further the work that was started with House Bill 2577. And particularly, one of the things that we are interested in having direction from the legislature on is to have needs assessments done on a statewide and regional basis. We have worked with the Employment Department for the labor data that they provide, but we would like to get something more specific to healthcare and then be able to use those data points to work with the education communities in order to make sure that we are delivering the statewide programs that we need and having the healthcare education provided in all areas of the state that's necessary. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Just one quick question in one breath. Yeah, Molly, thank you. And could we have a written copy of your testimony, please? And Joe, how many nurses do we need? I mean, I've been here so long. I've heard it year after year, and I'm wondering how many of those 64,000 people, if we could train them, could you place?
In the next 10 years, all of them and more, I would imagine. But I'll get you the exact number.
I sure appreciate knowing.
Studies on that. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, and the shortage of the nurse or healthcare workers, is this a national trend or unique to our state?
Pardon me, I didn't.
Oh.
Oh, the shortages? The
yes.
shortages are actually not only a national trend, but an international trend. We are looking at the average age of the nurse in Oregon is 47. The average age of the nursing instructor in Oregon is 55. And we are going to have to be replacing this baby boomer population within the next 10 years. That is not just an Oregon problem. It is a national problem.
Okay.
And in some areas of internationally, it's a problem as well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you.
And, please.
Chair Lynn, very quickly, so
yeah.
we can bring our last guests up, Ron and Greg.
Yes.
As I mentioned before, the healthcare area is one area that we've really focused on in getting more workers trained, and another area is in information technology. And Greg is going to speak about the project that he's working on, Greg Thomas. And then I'd really appreciate it if Ron could talk a little bit just in general about how we've been working together with our workforce and economic development systems over the last year and how he sees this as an opportunity going forward. Thank you.
Okay. Welcome, Greg and Ron. Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate it.
Happy to be here. My name is Greg Thomas. I'm director of the Oregon Training Network with the Software Association of Oregon. The Software Association is a 15-year-old nonprofit trade group that has traditionally served the software development companies and different kinds of software development concerns around the state. However, in the last couple of years, that mission has expanded to include IT professionals, information technology professionals, and organizations of all kinds. So you can imagine healthcare companies, that would be an excellent example, have large information technology infrastructures. Companies like Freightliner and ESCO, local firms, have large IT infrastructure as well. So one of the things that was found as the state and the Software Association studied the information technology was that there was a need for more training services. So my job with the Software Association is to speak with industry and employers of these kinds of people, find out what kinds of training they need, and aggregate those needs, acting as a broker. So the problem is a lot of these companies, they have maybe two people that need to be trained on something, and they may have to send the people somewhere to get the training. Usually, if it's a large-scale technology like Microsoft technology or a database technology like Oracle, usually you have to send someone out of state. The healthcare vendors talk to me about certain technologies they need. They talk about HIPAA and they talk about HL7 interfaces. Almost always, unless you have a critical mass of people that you can put through a training class of your own, you got to send people somewhere. So if I can find the two people at Company A, the two people at Company B, two people at Company C, and so on, that have similar needs, aggregate that need, bring the training to Oregon, everybody should save a buck. We'll probably be delivering more training than would have been delivered otherwise, and everybody wins. So that's what I'm about. I'm excited to be bringing to market the first courses right away. Next week, the first course is scheduled. We're doing two things, just to give you a taste, two buckets, if you will, subject areas. One is project management for IT professionals. This is pretty curious because this kind of training and instruction is available from the community colleges and from the Oregon University system. There still seem to be some unmet needs there. I'm bringing in a company from Chicago that has a computer-driven project management simulation that I think will be very engaging. I've also started doing some joint work with Portland State University to deliver an amalgam of two courses that they do. The other area is something called ITIL, the Information Technology Infrastructure Library, or ITIL. This is an emerging methodological standard that has been published by the British government, the British Department of Commerce, and is enjoying some international adoption. There isn't any expertise in this ITIL field anywhere on the West Coast that I can find. So I found, working with client organizations, that recommended a firm to me. I'm bringing in a firm also in March to do an executive overview on this material. And then in early April, they have a certification program on it as well. I have one firm, a local internet service provider in Oregon, a company probably most of you have heard of called Easy Street. It's made a large commitment to this training program and to this ITIL methodology. So I'm excited to be doing this work. It's something I enjoy, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Nelson.
One quick question. Greg, I'm sorry that Representative Dallum isn't here. Have you spoken before his committee on IT?
Which committee is that?
Representative Dallum's House Committee on IT.
No, I've not.
I'm going to recommend that, and I hope you do. How many jobs do you think are available if we trained enough people?
Jobs? That's a very interesting question, because the community of people that I am primarily serving right now is the incumbent workforce of information technology professionals across the state. We believe, studies have been done, there's about 70,000 of those people incumbent in those roles now. However, a lot of those people are programmers. And as you know, and as I believe personally, that's not where the jobs are going to be in the coming generation. Most of those jobs can be done for a lot less money overseas, and that is the strong trend. So the question becomes, how do American, and in particular Oregonian-based information concerns, how do they differentiate themselves? It's not going to be in the coding space. It's going to be in the standard space, things like project management potentially, because we're still innovating here, but we're not going to be doing a lot of coding here. Our kids won't be doing a lot of coding here, I don't think.
So, follow up, Mr. Chair, how many jobs would you estimate? Half about 70,000 additional, or?
It's hard for me to say, I'm sorry.
Okay, where would we go to find that out? I'm trying to get you some support.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, I believe through the Employment Department, they do a 10 or 12-year employment forecast. And
good.
So I suspect that that Debbie and her organization can provide you that. And it's broken out by employment classifications. So
it
would give you an indication on healthcare, information technology,
good.
And other venues.
Thank you.
Just one follow-up comment here. As you can see, some of the investments that the Workforce Investment Board is making are going the range. Everything from people who need literacy skills all the way to our professionals in the IT arena. And so we are trying to cover the gamut and look for the future. Where are the jobs going to be? How do we train up for them? As well as to continue to retool and reskill people so they're prepared for those jobs in the future. I'm hoping that Ron can speak to that for a few minutes.
Right, Ron.
Yeah.
We got time.
Well, I'll try to be very quick. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, again, I'm Ron Fox. I'm the manager of the Business Development Division for the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, and it is our division within the department that is charged with working directly with individual Oregon traded sector businesses and with the industry clusters or industry associations that are represented by those businesses. Obviously, workforce is an incumbent and essential part of every business and every industry group. Oregon competes in a global market. Greg mentioned that. We have smart people, so does India. We have smart people, so does all the other countries of the world. So our competition in the area of workforce really is global. I think there's been a couple of things mentioned today that I would just like to bring into context for you in the few minutes that I have. One, you heard a comment earlier about a shift in the focus for Oregon and its workforce development from a supply-side orientation to a demand-side orientation. And I think there's a really important message in that the jobs for Oregonians are really they come about as a result of the private sector job opportunities that are created by Oregon's businesses. So understanding those companies' needs, being able to both identify their immediate needs, as you have heard, I think, this morning from the two businesses, that they have opportunities that are before them today in their market space, and they're working to compete successfully, but also be able to project out, as Representative Nelson has mentioned, where will be those jobs that will employ Oregonians in 2010, 2015. So I think it's a very important shift, and I think it's been, you know, we're underway a couple of years in that effort, but I think you're seeing in today's presentations the results of that coming back to benefit Oregon. The second thing, I think there are some, as Lita has mentioned in her opening comments, there's a great deal of effort to bring the statewide and regional economic development efforts in partnership with the workforce development, work source opportunities that exist here in Oregon. And I'll just take a moment to just, and I won't identify individuals, but I'll tell you a story that for me sort of set the stage maybe 3 or 4 years ago here in Oregon. A gentleman who was a member of a regional workforce group had been on that workforce group for several years, and then sort of serendipitously was appointed or offered an appointment to the local economic development organization, and lo and behold, he didn't know that organization existed. So for a number of years, he was diligently working on workforce without realizing that there was a contemporary and parallel universe going on in the area of economic development. I don't think that will happen in Oregon today. I think everyone who's engaged in economic development in the state, from the State Department, our department, down to the individual economic development organizations across the state, they are integrated in the workforce efforts. A part of the Employer Workforce Training Fund was the formation of the regional response team, workforce response teams that you heard Lita speak to. The membership on those teams was some of the direction was set in the guidance given by the advisory committee and the executive order that formed that effort, and it specifically designated that the business development officers who are regionally assigned across the state of Oregon, serve in every community in the state, are a member of those respective workforce response teams. Additionally, members of the local economic development organizations are a designated member. Community colleges, the employment department, and I'm maybe missing someone, there's 5 or 6 people who are designated, and then local groups have the option of extending that to others that they believe are important. So what you're getting in this 100, and it's really too bad that you don't have the time to listen to every one of the businesses that are reporting here, because the stories are every bit as exciting and fulfilling for Oregon as the two businesses that you heard here this morning. So our efforts in the Economic Development Department are to identify opportunities with businesses through our direct contacts and our work with local organizations to get those businesses into these resources and get them the kind of assistance they need to advance the skills of their workforce, to get the workers they need to fill the opportunity positions that they have, and at the same time to work with organizations like the Software Association, the Oregon Bioscience Association, the Northwest Food Processors, a long list of industry groups, to work on broader, not individual company specific, but industry cluster specific workforce requirements. So I think the Employer Workforce Training Fund, and I'm going to take off my department hat and put on my personal hat and see, I think that Oregon has done a remarkable job of taking federal dollars that came with a number of strings attached to them. Within those strings, reformatted how that money is being spent and served businesses like you heard today from the two businesses. And I think if you had time and could listen to all 159 businesses that have received those kinds of assistance today, you would get pretty much the same story. So I think that's, and I'll put back on my department hat and answer any questions by hand. Thank you.
Okay, so 159 companies, are they mostly small, medium-sized company? Any big companies in our state utilizing their workforce program also?
Chair Lim, we have a range of companies from very small to very large, and actually our efforts, it's been, I think in the first year of the program, it was easier for large companies to get organized and to put together proposals for the resources. But as you heard today, the small companies are also getting help from these workforce response teams to meet various needs that they have and to prepare applications if they need help preparing an application. As we move forward with the program, we're discussing requirements really to put together more consortia project, and I don't know if that will be with, you know, some of the dollars or all of the dollars, but we've been getting a lot of input from the small business community that it would be helpful for more small businesses to access resources, and so we're trying to figure out how to assist them to do that. But we do have a very broad range of sizes of companies getting grants.
Okay. Representative Buckley?
Yes. Do you have a goal for the next biennium in terms of the number of companies that you hope to serve, or is that just dependent on the type, the number of applications that you get?
We have structured this program with a lot of local control.
Okay.
We have the 15 workforce response teams, and the state provides some guidance at the top, and then we send resources into those teams. And each of the teams, depending on their region, is, you know, structuring their program a little bit differently. So in a rural community, we probably are serving mostly very, very small businesses, and so we might have a lot of grants with just $100,000. In a large community like Portland, we may see few grants, maybe to larger companies, and then maybe some local teams have set aside a certain amount of resources just to go to smaller businesses and that sort of thing. So we don't have a specific number we're trying to target. We do have accountability. We do have performance measures, and we are looking at job creation, job retention, wage gain for people that are getting training, and a number of other measures.
One quick question. Yes. Question for Greg. You seem to enjoy your work so much. I was wondering, can my son have your job when you're done with it?
You'll have to send Burita.
All right. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I just want to state my complaint again.
Okay.
I'm getting very upset with this economic development group. And that, once again, my region, not only do we not get any investments or industrial land sites ready and have the greatest clog in transportation in the entire state, it's been there 50 years, the Newburgh-Dundee bypass, but we don't even qualify to be a respectful region. And I just want to complain for WorkSource Oregon Region and One Stop Centers and ask you to please come to Yamhill County.
All right, you heard the message.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, we are working on both of those issues for you.
Yeah, I just want to thank you for the each individual from the governor's office, from the workforce, and from the companies. Thank you very much for taking time to come out to testify. I think this is a big winner for the state, and also thank you for the members for the patience waiting until this time. With that, meeting is adjourned until...
Well, we're going to be on a field trip on Friday. We're going
Friday?
To the
yes.
Dalles. Anyone who's interested in going, the van will be leaving the Capitol at 7:30 in the morning, and we'll stop in Troutdale to pick up a few members there, and then the meeting starts at the Discovery Center in the Dalles at 10 a.m.
Okay, meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.